Our final case this morning is case number 564-4870, Limited Partnership v. McCarran International Airport. Mr. Eisenberg for the appellant, Mr. Lenhart for the respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Robert Eisenberg, appearing with Paul Ray on behalf of the appellants, and if possible, we'd like to reserve about 5 minutes for rebuttal. Although evidence regarding variance procedures is irrelevant to establishing whether a property owner is entitled to compensation for regulatory per se taking, such evidence is irrelevant in analyzing whether or not a taking occurred. That's the exact language that this court used in Sisolak and Sioux. But here's what the county told the district court about the language that the evidence was irrelevant. The Nevada Supreme Court made the extent to which a landowner can obtain a variance from Ordinance 1599 directly relevant to a takings determination. And the district court accepted that argument. The district judge said, summary judgment is granted in favor of the county on the variance issue. 70LP never requested a variance. On that basis, summary judgment is entered in favor of the county. On that basis, it appears summary judgment is appropriate regardless of all other arguments. And then after this court held in Sisolak that the adoption of 1599 effectuated an immediate, permanent, per se taking of property under the Nevada Constitution, here's what the district court said regarding 1599. There has been no taking. We respectfully contend that these holdings are by the district court are simply unsupportable. Although the county has done a fairly masterful job of confusing the issue, the real issue here is whether this court met what it said in Sisolak and whether this court is going to allow the county to gut Sisolak's holding and deny just compensation to people who own neighboring properties to Mr. Sisolak and the Sioux and other neighbors. Now, there's one thing that is important in the court's consideration. We undoubtedly are going to hear here today, and we've seen in the briefs, the county complaining about how much money they're going to have to pay if they lose this case. This court has already addressed that issue in Sisolak. The court said it is ultimately the airlines that would pay a judgment in an eminent domain proceeding, not the taxpayers, and any judgments against the county will not likely materially affect its financial condition. The county's brief and the amicus brief also argues that these landowners are greedy landowners who are trying to win the litigation lottery. The Beam family have been pillars of the community in Las Vegas for nearly 100 years. All they want is their constitutional right to just compensation. All they want is their fair day in court for a trial on the issue of how much money they should get for the just compensation.
Is categorizing this dispute, are we talking about whatever airspace the difference is between what came under Ordinance 1221 and 1599?
That's correct, Your Honor. This court, in the prior order of affirmance at the county's request, granted summary judgment, or the court affirmed summary judgment on statute of limitations dealing with the 1221 claim. The 1599 claim still remains. So the county referred to it as a slice of airspace between it, and that's essentially what we've asked for. And in fact, one of the addenda that we've attached to our brief shows you exactly what that slice is. On the issue of variances, what the county argued in the district court was that the county does not enforce Ordinance 1599. They repeatedly referred to it as non-enforcement of 1599. And what they said was that the non-enforcement of 1599 somehow makes the taking claim go away. But what this court held in Sisolak is that on the day the ordinance is enacted, on that very day, there is a permanent, immediate, unconditional taking of property for which the county has a categorical duty to compensate the owner. An immediate, unconditional taking. So what the county says is, well, even though there was an immediate categorical taking on the day the ordinance was enacted, you can look at what happened after that to somehow neutralize the taking. You can look at this so-called non-enforcement of the ordinance after it was enacted to somehow take away the taking. And they convinced the district judge of that. But the non-enforcement that they talk about only relates to the variances. They did, in fact, grant some variances. There was no showing that they granted every variance, but they, in fact, enforced the ordinance vigorously. When people applied for a variance or a permit from the Director of Aviation and a permit was required, even if those people had gotten FAA approval, determinations of no hazard, the Director of the airport consistently denied permits, asserting the height limitations in 1599, telling people that the airport vigorously enforces 1599, and denying permit applications based on 1599, and telling people it is clear that the department will not now support issuance of a permit or a variance because of the violation of the height limitations of 1599. So some people did apply for variances. They went through the cumbersome and expensive process of doing that, and some were granted. But the county says, well, that's non-enforcement of the ordinance. The ordinance is still on the books. As of last Friday, that ordinance has been on the books for 18 years, has never been repealed. And if the taking occurs on the day the ordinance was enacted, 18 years ago, how can the county's subsequent conduct, granting variances, somehow make the taking go away? Now the county also argues, well, there was no factual dispute about the diminution of fair market value. Well, there was a factual dispute. The county's own expert, Tammy Campa, she was the expert for Mr. Sisolak in his case, and her opinions, her deposition and report in that case, came into evidence in this case on the summary judgment proceedings. And what did Tammy Campa say? She said that the area south, is the microphone on? You can hear me okay?
Yeah, sure.
All right. The area south, as the development or growth south has been stopped because of the debilitating height restrictions as a result of ordinances 1221 and 1599. She's saying this was a blighted area. Some owners went into bankruptcy because of it. The blight in the area contributed to the bankruptcy. It has had a chilling effect on development and marketability. She said there's an area, she had talked to another appraiser who said there was an area about a mile that was a dead zone because of the airport height restrictions, and that dead zone crosses over 70 LP's property. She said it stopped, these ordinances stopped the logical progression of the strip. And then in her report, she said the height restrictions on the property south of Mandalay Bay have had a crippling effect on development. That there's clear evidence that development on the strip would have moved south except for the debilitating height restrictions as a result of ordinances 1221 and 1599. This expansion and these ordinances have resulted in a blighted neighborhood south of Sunset Road. It has had a chilling effect on the development and marketability of the subject site and the surrounding area. Well, the subject site she was talking about was Mr. Sisolak's property, and the surrounding area is 70 LP's property. So there was evidence. I guess what this all boils down to is the variances were irrelevant under Sisolak, yet the district court took them into effect and somehow determined that there was no taking of airspace, even though this court said in Sisolak there was immediate permanent taking of airspace. And the evidence on summary judgment and resolving all inferences in favor of 70 LP justified a determination that there was some diminution of value to be determined by the jury at trial, just like the juries made those determinations in the Sisolak case and the Sue case. And so we believe and respectfully contend that the district court erred in its application, or should I say non-application, of the law of Sisolak, and erred by resolving inferences in favor of the county and against 70 LP on summary judgment.
How do you respond to the conclusion of law that there was just no taking? Nothing was put forth that there was a taking of any property. The conclusion of law that's sitting in the order.
Well, the determination that there was no taking, as I say, is directly contrary to the determination that Sisolak court said. What the district judge essentially said, Your Honor, is that although Sisolak said that there was an immediate permanent taking of Mr. Sisolak's airspace above his property, the same ordinance, 1599, on the same day it was enacted, did not constitute a permanent unconditional taking of 70 LP's neighboring property. And we contend that that finding and conclusion is simply unjustified.
But before you sit down, could you comment on paragraph 8H on page 7 of the district court's findings of fact and conclusions of law, where the district court states, plaintiff has not produced evidence through experts or otherwise to establish that a variance up to the ordinance 1221 would not have been granted, so that its usable airspace in the after condition was somehow below those condition heights or thresholds. To me, what was the state of the evidence that was presented on the summary judgment record with respect to that finding, that there's simply nothing to support your argument on that slice of land being usable airspace?
Paragraph 8, or page 8?
On page 7.
And I'm sorry, Your Honor, paragraph H?
H. On page 7 of the district court's order.
Okay, that we did not produce evidence to establish variance, which would not have been granted.
And then the second sentence, that plaintiff has also failed to produce evidence, expert or otherwise, et cetera.
That aircraft occupy any of the airspace above, or that we, well, first of all, there was no requirement that aircraft have to occupy it. What Sisolak said is giving the airlines the right to fly through it was enough. The forced acquiescence, that was enough, and that there did not have to be any actual flights over. And as to whether or not it actually took any airspace, what we're saying is that the Sisolak itself said it did take the airspace, and it was an immediate, unconditional, permanent taking of airspace on the day that ordinance was enacted. Now, what the district court said here by finding that there was no so-called usable airspace taken, and that the word usable, as you may have seen in our briefs, was vastly overblown by the county. But that aside, the district judge's finding that there was no airspace taken was based on her finding of the available variances, which is what the Sisolak court said was irrelevant. And to the extent that the county had evidence that there were some available air variances, there was also evidence, or no evidence showing that variances were always granted or that 70LP definitely could have gotten a variance. The variance standard under 1599 was vastly more difficult to meet than the variance standard under 1221. You had to show exceptional or extraordinary circumstances that would justify it. Practical difficulty in extreme and inequitable circumstances. Extreme means something other than the norm. And so the judge's finding that there was no airspace that was taken was keyed off of her analysis of the relevance of the variances and the availability of variances. And we did have evidence that would have supported an inference that variances are not always guaranteed. Thank you, Your Honor.
I'll give you 2 minutes in rebuttal, Eisenberg. Mr. Leonard, I'm going to give you 17 minutes. I'll give you the 2 minutes now.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Kirk Lenhard with Lee Thompson, the Clark County District Attorney's Office, on behalf of Clark County, the owners and operators of McCarran International Airport. I think, as the Court's painfully aware, I've been here a number of times on these airport cases. Let me make something as clear as I know how to make it. Clark County is not standing before you today asking you to rewrite the Sisolak decision. We are in no way, shape, or form suggesting the Sisolak decision should be amended. My client has settled hundreds of millions of dollars of cases based on Sisolak, cases that had merit, based on the teachings of Sisolak. We have obeyed that case. It would be foolhardy for me to stand up here today and now, after the expenditure of such a large amount of funds, ask you to amend Sisolak. Nor is this case, as my colleague attempts to characterize it, Sisolak 2. It simply is not. There are stark and distinct differences between this case and the Sisolak case. Of course, starting with what the county calls the 1221 lid, something that did not exist in the Sisolak case. Nor has the county ever argued, either in the lower court or before this court, that a landowner is required to exhaust administrative remedies prior to proceeding to court to seek redress based on irregulatory takings, as in the Sisolak case. That was not the lower court's decision in her written opinion. That was not the lower court's decision in two motions to rehear. And that was not the county's argument at the lower court level. This case, quite simply, as Justice Pickering has already pointed out, is a case about the absolute and abject failure of proof. In any takings case, this court has clearly held on a number of occasions that a landowner has the burden of establishing the taking, the extent of the taking, and the amount of just compensation due. That's the landowner's burden. In this case, the landowners failed to establish the actual use of any airspace, and I'll address that in a moment. They failed to establish the taking of any usable airspace, in accord with Sisolak, and they failed to present evidence to demonstrate the amount of just compensation due. There is a total failure of proof in this case. As the court's well aware, in reviewing Judge Gonzalez's decision, because her summary judgment motion really has some factual determinations, as we know, facts that are unrefuted in this record. But in reviewing that, great deference has to be given to her findings, and she can only be reversed if her findings are clearly erroneous and not based on substantial evidence. It's through that standard that this court must review Judge Gonzalez's actions. It's the position of the county that these landowners cannot meet the strict facts of this case. In looking at her decision, it's important to keep two factors in mind here. One, this case is unique because it has a unique interplay between ordinances 1599 and 1221, the creation of the so-called slice. Secondly, for those justices from Southern Nevada, the location of the subject property. It's located approximately 6,000 feet south at the end point of the north-south runway of McCarran Airport. It's across from the old Bell's Mall. It's approximately 190 acres, bordered by Las Vegas Boulevard, Interstate 15, Warm Springs Road to the north, Blue Diamond Road to the south. A factor that had great influence for Judge Gonzalez when she reached her decision was the fact that properties north of the subject property, between the subject property and McCarran Airport itself, had obtained variances to pierce the 1599 imaginary surface. In fact, had obtained variances that would far exceed the imaginary surface over the subject property. These include properties at the Town Square Shopping Center, the Fry's Electronics Store, and of course, the Sisolak property itself, which was due north of the subject property, and a variance had been given to 66 feet. Quite simply, Judge Gonzalez refused to treat this case as a fiction. She looked to what happened in the neighborhood in reaching her decision. I certainly understand that the Sisolak decision had a major impact on airspace jurisprudence in this state, but it didn't change the age-old rule that a landowner had to do a before and after analysis in taking the case to determine before what the landowner had and after what the landowner had.
Mr. Linhart, don't we conflate a little bit, though, the issue of having a taking and then what damages are with this motion?
Being careful not to disagree with the court. I don't believe I am conflating that. I don't believe I conflated it at the lower court level. Let me explain why. Sisolak clearly stands for the proposition, as I argued before this court 2 years ago, the date of the taking is the date of the passage of the ordinance. I cannot dispute that. I've argued it. I'm bound by it. Of course, I'm bound by your decision to Dvorak and Johnson. But the extent of the taking still has to be determined once the taking has occurred. Once the ordinance is passed, you still have to determine how much usable airspace has been taken. That's the position we're taking in this case. And that's the position we took before Judge Gonzalez.
But as I was putting forward, my turn.
My magnetic personality.
We have, whether you concede or not, possibly, and I'll use the term possibly for you, a possible taking. Based upon the ordinance. What we don't clearly have is what that is, if any, which would be damages, if any. So why was summary judgment as to the whole thing appropriate at the time?
Our position is there was no taking, there could be no damage. But let me take one step further from what you're arguing, Justice Douglas, or what you're stating to me, excuse me. Let's assume for a second there's a technical taking. And even though the airspace could be used, and this landowner had every right to build in that airspace, even though no planes are flying through that airspace, there's still a technical taking. There is still no damage. I can't imagine a circumstance under the Nevada Constitution, and I understand that Sisolak was decided on Nevada constitutional grounds. I can't imagine a circumstance where this court would differ from the U.S. Supreme Court in Brown versus Legal Foundation of Washington, where it was determined the damages are what the landowner has lost. And if the landowner has not lost anything, there are no damages, therefore there is no compensable taking. I would suggest that would also be the rule under the Nevada Constitution. And if you feel that we have conflated somehow the two concepts, taking and damages, put the takings out for a second, treat it as a technical taking, and ask yourself, where is the proof in this case, that these landowners could not build in the very airspace they're attempting to seek compensation for today. There was absolutely none. And under Brown versus Legal Foundation of Washington, then therefore, there is no damage. And that's the
I'm looking at, and I ask that question because I'm looking at the motion, defendant's renewed motion for partial summary judgment of the taking of airspace above the ordinance 1221 height threshold. And the opening paragraph, the last sentence, the county therefore submits an ordinance 1221 height threshold constitutes the ceiling of any airspace taking claim based on ordinance 1599 as a matter of law because it could not have taken the same airspace. And it goes on, but that's...
That refers to above 1221. Above, once we had the statute of limitations determination on Ordinance 1221, all airspace above that ordinance could not be taken again. That's the position we took, and I think that's the position the appellants have conceded in their brief, where they concede the slice is, in fact, the issue before this court. Everything above 1221 is no longer in play. And that's what that preamble to the motion is referring to. Now, in fairness, and I'll focus, I think I see where you're going, Judge.
And I'm looking at the conclusion that's over on page 5 of 13 before
that's
we get
stated
the relevance. So go ahead.
No, I mean, we clearly argued to the district court there was no taking of the airspace because under 1599, again, using the before and after analysis, we did a before analysis and an after analysis. And the way that's done in every one of these cases except this one, the cases I tried with Laura, the cases I tried with Jim Levitt, the cases I tried with Kermit, it's the same measure of proof. An airspace expert and appraiser comes in and opines as to what type of variance you could receive from the Board of County Commissioners. And that's based on the filing of a Form 7460 with the FAA and a determination of no hazard. Then the Board of County Commissioners generally follows that determination.
Could you build a high-rise hotel?
Absolutely not.
Well, but again, isn't that a jury question?
No, because, Your Honor, you know why you can't build a high-rise hotel there? Because there's a lid. The 1221 ordinance created a lid when they let the statute of limitations run on 1221. That's what prevents the creation or building of a high-rise. Nothing to do with Ordinance 1599. According to the undisputed testimony in this case, and let me stress, unrefuted and undisputed, the experts all said a variance would be granted through the 1599 imaginary surface all the way through the 1221 imaginary surface. The entirety of the airspace of the slice could be used by these landowners. There's no issue of fact there. The unique aspect of this case is what I'm somewhat... I'm not being flip when I call it a lid. It's the lid in this case.
What can they build, Mr. Leonard? You've described Town Center and Fry's. I mean, what is that, a two-story building and Fry's?
Well, Town Center has some
areas that are
100 feet high.
Oh, okay.
But the slice here goes from 1 foot to 154 feet.
Okay.
And that's the problem here. And it's the continuing problem. It was undisputed again on this record. You could build through the 154-foot line. There would be a variance granted. So what they're seeking today is compensation for airspace they could use. That was the problem the county raised, and that's the problem that the county put forward in front of Judge Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. And she gave this plaintiff, or these landowners, every opportunity to dispute the county's undisputed expert testimony. Gave them every opportunity to come forward with an affidavit or an expert report saying the following, I can't build in the airspace. That would have created the issue of fact. They didn't do it.
So if any proof of damages, any suggestion of damages had been set forth below, we wouldn't be here.
I don't think she would have granted the summary judgment. She's a hard judge. And we went through that record with her again and again and again. They had an airspace expert. All he opined was the imaginary surfaces. Their appraiser specifically did not consider the issue of variances. It was undisputed in this case that you could build a structure through the slice. She asked them to dispute that testimony. They stuck on, no, 1599 is the taking. We don't need anything else. They were treating Sisalak as a verb. It's not a Sisalak. It's still a taking. That was the problem here, and that's what Judge Gonzalez faced. Keep in mind, and you know, an issue came up in my colleague's previous comments about the actual use of the airspace. I'm not standing here today saying the actual use of the airspace is required as a test under Sisalak, but it certainly is a factor to be considered by the court as whether the airspace is usable or not. And I'd remind the court of Justice Mottman's comments in what the case we call Sue 2, the second Sue case before this court. As indicated above, in Sisolak, this court essentially determined that when airport regulations preserve the right to fly through a landowner's airspace, and planes actually make use of this airspace, this constitutes a permanent physical invasion of property and is properly categorized as a per se regulatory taking. Now, this property begins at 6,000 feet south of the south point of the north-south runway of McCarran International Airport. The slice goes from 1 foot to 154 feet. Does anybody think that passenger aircraft are in any way, shape, or form using that slice of airspace? Of course not. So what we have before this court right now is undisputed testimony that you can build in the very space they're contending is taken, the slice. You have no challenge in the record that aircraft are not utilizing the airspace. All facets of the Sisolak test have not been met by this landowner. They still have the burden of going forward with the evidence, forward with proof. This is not a review of the Sisolak decision by Judge Gonzalez. This was pure and simple, a determination of an abject and total failure of proof on the part of these landowners. Lest there be any question about what occurred here, four of the seven parcels were ultimately sold by these landowners. This is on the record. To a gentleman named Howard Bullock. He had a company called Imperial Realty or Imperial Mortgage. Mr. Bullock immediately filed a 7460 with the FAA. And what did he get? 140 to 200 feet right away. These plaintiffs were contending that their damages started at 1 foot above the ground up to about 80 or 90 feet. Howard Bullock clearly showed what Judge Gonzalez already knew, that the 1599 imaginary surface could easily be penetrated over that property, that you could build through the entirety of the so-called slice. The only reason Mr. Bullock did not seek a variance was the well-known economic downturn that occurred in Las Vegas. Under the record before her, Judge Gonzalez felt that she had no choice but to grant summary judgment in favor of the county. I would suggest, based on the strict standard of a review of summary judgment that this court has imposed, that her decision should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barnard.
Counsel argues that on summary judgment there was no proof, no evidence that 70LP wouldn't have been able to build on the property and no evidence that 70LP suffered any damages. What 70LP was told was that their raw vacant land, if they attempted to build a golf course, they were told by the airport that a man standing on the first tee getting ready to tee off would be violating the airspace limitation. That seems to be some evidence that they may not have been able to build on their property and that they may have suffered some damage.
The theory was that the golf ball would go too high or what? I don't quite follow that. But okay.
That the man standing, maybe even the tee itself,
okay,
would have been a violation of the height restriction. That there was, they say there was no evidence that they wouldn't have been able to build. Well, there was evidence that the variance application process was stringent. There was expert testimony that it imposed a high burden, that it would impose a serious warning to potential buyers. And how
Mr.
about
Eisenberg, there was no application by your client to seek one of those difficult to receive variances.
And that's another thing counsel says is that, they never took the position here that we had the obligation to exhaust administrative remedies. But what they always took the position is that we did have the obligation to apply for a variance. It's just a play on words. If you look at their counter motion for summary judgment, they list all the reasons why there was no taking. They say 70LP never requested a no hazard determination. 70LP never applied for a height variance under ordinance 1599. Then they repeat it later in the same motion. 70LP never applied for a height variance under ordinance 59. And that's exactly what the judge said when she granted summary judgment. 70 never applied for a height variance, and on that basis, I'm granting summary judgment. Thank you.
The court expected a fine argument from Mr. Lenhart, Mr. Eisenberg, and you lived up to our expectations. We thank you both for your arguments. The briefs is submitted. This matter is submitted.